This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
Good afternoon, everyone. In starting, I want to make one overall point in terms of our assessment of the president's budget. The budget, in our view, is basically a sound approach to addressing our fiscal challenges. For the short term, it stabilizes the debt as a share of the economy for most of the coming decade, which will reduce risks of a financial crisis and give policymakers the time to address the serious long-term fiscal problems we face. And although the budget doesn't itself actually propose the specific steps to address the longer-term problem, it sets the stage for bipartisan negotiations to do so. Let me walk you through now what we think are some of the most important things about the budget, and you'll see why we come to this conclusion. After I do, we'll go to your questions, and joining me in answering your questions will be two of the city's leading budget experts, Jim Horney and Paul Vandewater, of the center's staff. The president's budget, as I noted, takes an important step towards addressing our fiscal challenges by cutting the deficit enough to stabilize the debt as a share of the economy for most of this decade. Stabilizing the debt as a share of the economy is the most important fiscal goal for the decade ahead. That's been the conclusion of virtually every high-level fiscal commission of the past year. By doing so, the budget would prevent a debt explosion and give policymakers more time to address the longer-term deficits that are driven largely by rapidly rising health care costs throughout the U.S. healthcare system and the aging of the population. The budget achieves this goal by cutting domestic discretionary programs, securing some savings in certain entitlements, limiting defense expenditures, and raising revenues primarily by curbing a plethora of tax loopholes. To be sure, the budget would not keep the debt stabilized in later decades. The administration acknowledges that. The president and Congress will need to take much bigger steps on both spending and taxes to meet those long-term challenges. The budget does signal administration interest in bipartisan discussions on these issues. For example, in a noteworthy passage in the budget, it explicitly calls for bipartisan talks on Social Security and lays out the administration's principles for such negotiations. The budget includes a number of hard choices. Its five-year freeze on overall funding for non-security discretionary programs, which saves $400 billion over 10 years, includes a number of deep cuts, such as a 50% cut in the Community Services Block Grant and the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program. It also includes hard choices in some other programs, even when it isn't cutting their overall funding, but rather reducing the amount by which their funding increases. For example, in a major change, it eliminates all Pell Grant assistance to help low-income students afford summer courses. The budget would allow the various Bush tax cuts for people making over $250,000 a year to expire on schedule, although the budget doesn't count those savings as part of its $1.1 trillion in estimated deficit reduction, and as noted, proposes to close various loopholes. In addition, it would cap the value of itemized deductions at 28% and use the savings to extend relief from the alternative minimum tax for 3 years. Until now, presidents and congresses of both parties have repeatedly extended AMT relief without paying for it, that is, by financing it through bigger deficits. This is a significant change, the notion that AMT relief should start to be paid for. So we conclude that given current fiscal circumstances and political realities, the budget strikes a tough but generally sound overall balance among the need for fiscal restraint, the need to avoid large immediate cuts while the economy is still weak, the need to protect effective high-priority programs, especially those that represent effective long-term investments, and the need to avoid inflicting serious harm on the poorest and most vulnerable members of our society. In our view, one exception, though, is the deep cut in the Energy Assistance Program. The budget proposes to return that program to its 2008 funding level on the grounds that home energy prices are much lower now than when Congress substantially increased LIHEAP funding in response to a rise in those prices. However, the Energy Department's own price forecasts indicate that home energy prices in the winter of 2012 will be back to their levels in the winter of 2008 and higher than in any year since then and in the years before 2008. And of particular note, the number of people living in poverty is expected to be about 15% greater in 2012 than it was in 2008. The final major point I'd like to discuss deals with the question of whether there should have been more long-term deficit reduction in the budget. Some critics charge the budget's deficient because it doesn't go farther in addressing the nation's long-term fiscal problems. And we're in full agreement that the President and Congress must do much more to put the budget on a sustainable path for later decades. Nevertheless, we believe this criticism of the budget is misguided. It ignores the fact that had the budget included a large array of specific proposals for longer-term deficit reduction, ranging from changes in Social Security to tax increases, that almost certainly would have made it harder, not easier, for the administration and Congress to eventually reach bipartisan agreement on those matters. Such specific presidential proposals would have invited immediate attacks from lawmakers across the political spectrum. They almost certainly would have led to pledges signed by scores or hundreds of members of Congress never to agree to these changes, and that in turn would have made it harder for negotiators to reach agreement on large, longer-term deficit reduction measures. We need to remember that a goal at this point should be to keep policymakers from taking various specific proposals off the table before the negotiations even commence. Now, that's a problem even in normal political times. And these aren't normal political times. The atmosphere is much more toxic now than it was at periods in the past when successful bipartisan negotiations occurred. Let me give you two examples. The health reform law contains most of the major recommendations for Medicare savings that Congress's own bipartisan expert advisory commission, the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, has made in recent years. But despite statements by Republican congressional leaders that Congress must significantly reduce projected health care program costs, these same lawmakers have attacked and called for the repeal of these Medicare savings provisions. Similarly, the President's budget includes a well-crafted framework for reforming unemployment insurance financing to achieve four important goals. One, to avoid automatic tax increases on businesses that will otherwise occur in the next 2 years at a time when the economy is still weak. Two, to prevent a future UI financing crisis that in the next recession could create a need for a federal bailout or takeover of insolvent state unemployment insurance trust funds. Three, to enact UI tax reforms by lowering the federal UI tax rate and broadening the UI tax base in a revenue-neutral manner. And four, to reduce the federal budget deficit in the process. Now, All four of those goals ought to appeal to policymakers across the political spectrum. Yet, when the details came out last week, many Republican congressional leaders immediately jumped to attack the proposal, claiming it would raise taxes on business, even though UI taxes on employers will rise automatically and sooner in many states across the country in the absence of these reforms. Those taxes would increase automatically to repay the loans that states have taken from the federal government to pay unemployment benefits during the current downturn. So, sad to say, these examples suggest that the political atmosphere is so toxic that the administration was on sound footing in not offering in the budget various controversial proposals that policymakers could consider more constructively as part of deficit reduction negotiations. Floating proposals that swiftly get blown up as politicians jockey for political advantage doesn't advance the cause of fiscal responsibility. Finally, there's an issue of timing. We all know that over the long run, the largest contribution to deficit reduction will need to come from slowing the rate of growth of healthcare costs throughout the U.S. healthcare system. But we also know that major savings probably aren't achievable in this area in the next 5 or 10 years. Most of the steps we know how to take to reduce those expenditures were taken in health reform. Now, health reform also contains an extensive array of demonstration projects, pilots, and research to test and identify important cost-saving reforms in healthcare delivery and payment systems, which could eventually produce substantial savings. But these reforms will take time to identify, test, and then institute broadly. While these reforms have the potential for large savings in future decades, they offer little realistic hope of big savings before 2020. Social Security is the same story. Social Security solvency can contribute to deficit reduction in future decades, but here also, policymakers aren't going to be able to secure sizable savings in the decade ahead. Policymakers across the political spectrum have agreed that changes in Social Security benefits generally shouldn't affect people now 55 or over, and that any reforms in Social Security should phase in gradually over a long period of time. So this creates a dilemma. How can policymakers meet the need to stabilize the debt in the decade ahead if they can't achieve substantial savings in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security in that time frame, or at least can't get savings in those areas in that time frame without imposing serious hardship on millions of the nation's poorest and sickest citizens? So the president's budget provides an answer or a path through an array of changes across all parts of the budget to bring deficits and debt down to a safe range in this decade, buying us time to find and make the larger changes, especially in system-wide reform of healthcare delivery and payment systems that will be crucial to keeping deficits under control over the long term.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Read commentary from our experts at offthechartsblog.org. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, and create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.